What is up, sports fans? It is the first weekly, bi-weekly edition. Oh, what is it? Is it bi-weekly?
Yes.
It would be bi-weekly. It is the first bi-weekly edition of the Between the Tackles podcast. Joe, Manish, Burge, in their respective seats tonight. We got a lot to get to today. We actually had some compelling football. Football games that meant something. Football games that came down to the wire. Some great decisions, some not-so-great decisions. We've got some winners and losers to talk about here on Sunday night as right before. So just for full disclosure, we're recording in that pocket between the 4 o'clock games and the Sunday night game. So most of the week has already transpired, but just right off the top, let's start with some winners and losers. Manish, give me one off the top here.
Well, I'm talking about the biggest winner there is this week. And that's that the Chiefs dynasty is still alive. We were 9 minutes away from it potentially being over. They were down 20-9 at home against the Colts. The offense was sputtering. Patrick Mahomes looked lost for the better part of that game. And then it's that Patrick Mahomes magic, you know, made some key throws to Rashee Rice. One really important throw late in the game to Juju Smith-Schuster, and they escaped with a win. So I know a lot of people were desperately hoping that Kansas City would lose and fall to 5-6, but they're 6-5, not out of the woods yet, but certainly squarely in the playoff hunt right now.
I was one of those guys. I was rooting for the Kansas City Chiefs to win this game. As a Patriots fan, I wanted to see the Colts get another L in the loss column. But yeah, you're right. In this game, they figured out how to run the ball. They figured out how to run the ball. Kareem Hunt had a really good day, over 100 yards rushing. And the Chiefs did what they needed to do to kind of stay alive in the playoff race. And, you know, Patrick Mahomes avoided losing three straight games in a single season with this game. He had lost three in a row if you date back to the Super Bowl last year and weeks 1 and 2 this year, but he avoided it. It was a good get-right game. It was a tough, tough opponent for Kansas City. So at this point, you can't write them off.
Yeah, I think I told you guys to not do this. I warned both of you weeks ago, maybe even months ago now. I was like, don't do it. It's the new Patriots. It's just like everybody saying COVID's the new flu. Well, the Chiefs are the new Patriots. They're not dead until you kill them. They're not dead until they're eliminated from the playoffs. The Chiefs, I think, are in I was looking at it before. The Chiefs are now in they're now in 10th place before, and they own the tiebreaker over the Houston Texans, but the Pittsburgh Steelers own the tiebreaker over the Chiefs as of right now. So they still need need a couple bounces to go their way, but Manish, you said the clutch throws in the fourth quarter. I mean, I watched kind of like the last, I don't know, 20, 25 minutes of this game, kind of flip it around to try to get a taste of each game. And on paper, it looks like Mahomes was struggling, like you said, in the first half of the game or the first three quarters of the game. And then you get to overtime, the Chiefs defense makes a stop. And then Patrick Mahomes is basically flawless. He throws a strike to Rashee Rice down the middle of the field. I think he hit Xavier Worthy on the same drive. And it's crazy how you have these guys are just plug and play. They're drafting guys. They have Tyquan Thornton producing in the earlier of the season. They still have Hollywood Brown actually producing for the Chiefs. And then you add the younger guys like Worthy and Rice. And then you have the old stalwarts like Kelce. I mean, it's going to work. It's going to work until Mahomes isn't the best player in football. And until I see him like knocked out of the playoffs or non-competitive, I'm never going to change that opinion.
Yeah. And look, you touched on Rice. You got to give him a lot of credit. And as of right now, we don't know the severity of his injury. He's dealing with something because he was out for a few plays. And then even when he got the ball, you know, he would get the necessary yardage and then kind of slide down. So something was bothering him. As of right now, you know, we're not privy to, you know, what exactly that is, but he was just terrific after the catch as well. And you also have to give Steve Spagnuolo a lot of credit because they held this Colts offense to about 250 yards, Daniel Jones under 200 yards, and only for the second time, I believe, this season, really neutralized Jonathan Taylor. The Steelers had done it a few weeks back, and he was a non-factor in this game, you know, about under 60 yards, under 4 yards a carry, for a guy who had been carrying the Colts to where they got to this point, to be a non-factor is a credit to that defense. So yeah, look, they're not the Chiefs of old, but they're clearly they're not dead yet. And as you said, they are like the new Patriots, where until they're officially eliminated, you know, they're not. Now they do have a tough stretch of games coming up. They got Dallas, who's, you know, coming off a big win this week. They've got the Texans, who we saw what they did against Josh Allen on Thursday night, and then they've got a tough division game in the Chargers, who beat them to start the season. So the next 3 weeks are going to tell. tell you a lot about whether the Chiefs are, you know, going to make real headway to make the postseason or if they're going to get bounced.
Well, do you guys want to keep it in the NFC, the AFC South? Bears, give me another winner of this week.
Yeah, I'm going to do one of the teams that's kind of competing right now with both of these teams in the Indianapolis Colts and the Kansas City Chiefs. That's the Jacksonville Jaguars. They end up getting a win against the Arizona Cardinals in overtime. They win by a field goal. This was a big win for them. I mean, Trevor Lawrence struggled a little bit, had a couple of bad turnovers, interceptions in this game. But they got in and they got the win that they needed. They needed to keep pace with Houston, who is coming off, like Manish just said, that big win against Buffalo on Thursday night. They took advantage of gaining a game back from the Indianapolis Colts. Now they sit one game out of the lead in the AFC South. So this was kind of one of those games that the Jaguars had to have. They had to have it, especially given what else went on in the league today. And I think it is a big win for them. Houston is right at their heels. That division is going to be competitive down to the end of the season here. It's going to be very interesting to see what plays out.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because every time I think that maybe Trevor Lawrence isn't that good, he has a performance where it makes me think, hey, you know what, maybe he actually could be good. This was a strange game because, you know, statistically he put up a lot of yards, but he did have three picks, and that's really been his bugaboo. But you got to give Jacksonville and Lawrence a lot of credit because they did fall behind midway through the fourth quarter, came back, won in overtime against a team, you know, granted, that isn't, the most formidable opponent in Arizona. But for a game in which they were dominated time of possession, Arizona had that ball for, I don't know what it was, but it was well over 35 minutes, I believe. So they got dominated in time of possession and they fell behind again midway through the fourth quarter. And then for them to come back and win in overtime, big win for Liam Cohen. I'm not exactly sure that the Jags are for real, you know, whether or not they make the playoffs or not, but they're certainly much improved from a year ago.
Well, I think the Jags and Trevor Lawrence are one and the same. Obviously, like a team will go as its quarterback goes, but like I still don't know what to think of the Jaguars. They play such a Jekyll and Hyde brand of football. Yeah. They could be so ice cold. They could be so ice cold on offense. I think I said it last week. I'm going to keep reiterating it. They have to get the run game going. I think Trevor Lawrence he's a good quarterback, small g good, but Travis Etienne for a 15 for 86, averaging 6 yards a carry. Like that's what you need for this Jaguars offense to be successful. You need to get on the ground early. You need to give Trevor Lawrence time. And then I always forget that how athletic Trevor Lawrence is. Like he's an absolute moose, but like I think the best part about his game today, and I think the skill that he needs to keep honing, is his ability to know when to escape and know when to pick up first downs with his legs. And I think he did that a lot at the end of the game and in overtime of this game. So I don't know. I liked Burge's pick. We're going to save our picks for Thursday, but I like Burge. I liked your pick here for the Jaguars going on the road to the Cardinals. I think the Cardinals play hard. I think there's something to Jacoby Brissett and having him behind center there and having a quarterback you can believe in or maybe actually reads his playbook instead of playing Call of Duty all night. I think that could really charge up a team like an Xbox controller. But this game is it's the friggin' Jaguars, dude. They have so much skill. They have so much skill at the skill positions. They have a pretty decent. They're pretty decent on each side of the ball. But like we said, they're so Jekyll and Hyde with their quarterback play and just their consistency overall. So not a team I would be picking in the playoffs, but a team I definitely like with their age and their new coach. I do think they're going to be around for a little bit. But let's jump back over to the NFC and grab another winner here. My first winner is going to be the Bears. The Bears are 8-3. dramatic pause. Let it marinate. The Bears are 8-3. They're in third place. They're in third place in the NFC. If the playoffs started today, they would be hosting a playoff game in the NFC. So I just was jotting down bullet points here. I mean, the culture they have, Ben Johnson has their team playing as a cohesive unit. The fact that he can keep all of those wide receivers, their parents and their parents' Twitter accounts on the same boat, pulling in the same direction. I really find that impressive. And dude, Caleb Williams hype. Had a good day, 3 touchdowns, no picks. The defense is playing. I think the defense is playing well. So, yeah, I think there's a lot to be said about the Bears, but I think we talk so much about coach quarterback combo, and I think there's a new budding formidable coach quarterback combo coming out of the NFC North there with Williams and Ben Johnson.
No, I agree with that. I think that if you had told me that the Bears would be leading the NFC North in week one this season, you might have found me falling on the floor laughing. They're leading that division, a division that we said was going to be extremely competitive this year. I think we thought that Minnesota would have been more competitive in that division than they've been. But they lead the division, and Caleb Williams not turning the ball over, Ben Johnson's got this team playing the way that he wants them to play, and they're going to be right there at the end, man. They're going to be right there.
Yeah, and I think, dude, I think we just picked the wrong, like, coach quarterback combo to go. I mean, I like the infrastructure in Minnesota better than the infrastructure for a young quarterback in Minnesota. In Chicago. But I didn't account for Ben Johnson actually being able to be a legitimate head coach in the league, and for Caleb Williams to kind of pull himself out of kind of the mental torture chamber that that we had that he had been in for the season before.
And you got to wonder where this leaves the Steelers. You know, Aaron Rodgers wanted to play this week, but clearly I think there was more wishful thinking than anything else. Like, will he be ready next week when they play the Bills? Will he be ready the week after when they play the Dolphins? He sure as heck better be ready when they play the Ravens in 2 weeks, because now that the Ravens are now, ahead of them in the AFC North, that's going to be a pivotal game. Ravens beating the Jets on Sunday as well. So Mason Rudolph, you know, give him credit for hanging in there. It was a competitive game. But ultimately, if the Steelers want to make the playoffs, it's not going to be with Mason Rudolph. It's going to be with Aaron Rodgers. And I tend to think that regardless of what happened today, he is going to find himself on the field next week and not take another game off.
And I called this last week, dude. He wasn't going to play, dude. He does this all the time, dude. He just got to, like, you're squarely in the playoff hunt. Take two weeks off, like, get a full 3 week recovery on a bone injury, and you're pretty much good from there with some extra padding. I don't know. It just rubs me the wrong way. But yeah, you're right. I think it's not surprising, but it's a testament to the team the Ravens have to stay the course and overtake the Steelers after kind of the abysmal start of the season they had with all their injuries and the losses and weeks missed kind of piling up there.
And the Steelers don't have an easy game next week either. They got to play Buffalo. So, I mean, Aaron Rodgers better be back for that one.
I'm not following. Are they a layup or are they a formidable one of the best teams in the conference, Burge? I can't.
You asking
tell.
Me? I've never once called the Bills a layup. I have never once called the Bills a layup.
Yeah, potato, potato.
It is, Burge. You're right, though. Not only next week. Look, they play the Ravens twice. Still, they've got the Lions on the schedule. They do have a couple, at least one clunker or one easy game potentially in Cleveland. Miami's the other game. They probably should win, but two games against the Ravens. A Bills game, a Lions game. So, the next month and a half is going to be pretty treacherous, I think, for Pittsburgh.
Speaking of the Cleveland Browns, shout out to Shedeur Sanders, first Cleveland Browns quarterback to win his first start in like 35 years. So shout out to him. Next game we want to get into here is Vikings and Pack. I know somebody has a winner or a loser in this game.
Yeah, I think my biggest loser is the Vikings brass in general for – deciding that going with J.J. McCarthy this year was a smarter move than re-signing Sam Darnold or Daniel Jones, because those two guys are finding success elsewhere. J.J. McCarthy, for a third straight week, had two interceptions. That's only happened twice in the last 30 years in Vikings franchise history. The other time was back in 2012 with Christian Ponder, a former first-round bust. McCarthy's just, he looks lost out there. His quarterback rating's under 58 for the season. I saw a really startling statistic from today's loss to the Packers. He only attempted five balls that went farther than farther than 8 yards in the 10 yards in the air. Only five, and two of those five were picked off. I think he had two completions, two interceptions for about like 34 yards. So it was dink and dunk all game long. He's just not giving them an opportunity to win. He's obviously neutralizing some you know high level weaponry in Jordan Addison and Justin Jefferson and T.J. Hockenson. Those guys are essentially worthless when they don't have somebody at the quarterback position that can get them the ball effectively, efficiently, and consistently. He's killing them, and it's a shame because you guys remember how dominant they were last year with Sam Darnold. Even though they fell short in the playoffs and Darnold looked really bad in the last two games, the offense that we saw last year was so different than the offense that we're seeing this year. And that's because of the stark difference in the quarterback play. J.J. McCarthy is killing them and costing them games.
And I feel like he's a quarterback that's like never, ever passed the eye test once. Like I didn't see it when he was at Michigan. He was on a loaded roster at Michigan. I didn't see it. The combine statistics weren't overly they didn't jump off the paper. And even in his limited time, like earlier this year before he got hurt, like I really didn't see it then either. So I don't get the point of sticking him back in the game here in like midseason here. They're a viable team. I don't know. I just don't get it. The like you said, the biggest loser is the Vikings front office. For all the good they've done drafting wide receivers, running backs, getting a defense together, putting a decent coaching staff together, they just have a blind spot for the quarterback position. I mean, they had Case Keenum kind of catch lightning in a bottle. They let him go. You had Sam Darnold catch lightning in the bottle. You let him go. You had Daniel Jones on your practice squad. You let him go. He's absolutely, his hair's on fire in Indianapolis, despite the loss today. Third seed in the AFC. So I don't know. I every time I watch the Vikings play, I don't know why this is so weird, but like obviously because they played together in college, but like imagine Joe Burrow on like in a dome with all of those weapons. Like imagine a guy like that. Like that team is effing stacked. They got a decent tight end too in Hockenson. They got good guys in the backfield. They have Aaron Jones and Jordan Mason. So it's, I don't know. It's almost an embarrassment of riches. It's almost like almost like the Eagles in a sense, but like not as turbocharged because the Eagles roster I think is a little better and I think the quarterbacks are a little better. But dude, I always say like, what if they just like this offseason, they're like, dude, sell us one of those TVs off your loading dock. We'll give you three first round picks and J.J. McCarthy. Send Joe Breezy to Minnesota. Send him to the Twin City. I would just love to see that. I think Minnesota is so cool when they're competitive.
I totally agree.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Birch. I don't mean to cut you off, but you're not the first person to come up with a hypothetical trade involving Joe Burrow. I know that Jets fans are dreaming of trading all these first-round picks for Joe Burrow. Let me tell everyone something. Joe Burrow is not getting traded anywhere. He will be the Bengals quarterback for the foreseeable future, injuries notwithstanding.
It would be something to see, though, because that roster, Joe, I'll just echo for a second here those thoughts. I mean –
wait, how long until you don't think there's a decent possibility that he could want out at any point in time in the near future?
Well, you know, he's an Ohio kid, so I mean, he likes the area. It's not like he's some California kid. I'm not talking about anyone specific, but it's not like he's from out of the area and would not want to play in middle America. I think his frustration lies with him getting hurt more than anything else because they paid both wide receivers because he wanted them there. So they're helping him in some respect. The defense needs a lot of work, but I don't see, and I could be wrong, but I don't see Joe Burrow kicking and screaming his way out of Cincinnati.
Might be right. Birds, Eric, I'm terribly sorry.
Yeah, your I got point, cut off point, twice there. I don't really have any point. I was just going to echo. I was going to say, Joe, I totally agree with you. I mean, my question for you guys, how long until Justin Jefferson asks for out of Minnesota?
Oh, yeah, that's going to happen real quick if they don't decide to move off of J.J. McCarthy. It won't be public. You know, it's not like something where Justin Jefferson's going to make it clear he wants out. I mean, he'll have his agents take care of all that stuff. I'm not saying it's gonna happen.
Books on the sideline and going on streams telling people to drop. Like
I don't think it's gonna happen this offseason because you know J.J. McCarthy, for all intents and purposes, is a rookie. He didn't play last year. But if things don't change quickly with the quarterback and don't improve quickly with McCarthy, you better believe that Justin Jefferson is going to win out.
And I feel like the Vikings are also in that weird middle where it's like they're not bad enough to be a top five pick and be able to scoop like one of the top quarterbacks in the draft, but they also don't have the quarterback to put them over the top to win like go on some legitimate playoff runs. So like they're stuck in that middle. They're going to be probably picking somewhere between like 8 and 15 again this year if they don't make the playoffs. So yeah, I don't know. The Vikings are in that weird purgatory between good and bad.
I know a place where he'd be welcomed with open arms.
With arms wide open.
Yeah, Creed reference. There you go. And that's going to be my team that I'm picking as my loser this week, and it's going to be from the homer. It's the Patriots. And it's not for the results of the game. They won the game 26-20 against Cincinnati, but it's on the health front. This Patriots team, for all intents and purposes this year, has really escaped the injury bug up until this point. But that changed today. The Patriots lost Will Campbell, their left tackle. They lost their left guard, Wilson. They lost another defensive tackle in Tonga, who we've talked about on this podcast, and we really love that signing by the Patriots. And a couple of other guys, you know, Brandon Schuler, you can say what, you know, for what he is. I mean, we have mixed opinions about him. But they really, really got bit by the injury bug today, and the injuries to the left side of the offensive line and the two rookies in Wilson and Campbell, I think, hit the most because it doesn't appear that they're going to be a short-term injury there. So the depth of the Patriots, which we've been pretty vocal, Joe and I, on here about them lacking depth at multiple critical positions on this team, it's going to really be tested now. And that we're going to be subjected to watching Viridian Lowe again at left tackle, which we were last year. And that was not a fun experience. So hopefully he's improved under this new coaching staff to take that position on Drake May's blindside.
Yeah, and I was just – you took the words right out of my mouth. Is like the one thing that we've said about the optimism we've had about the Patriots this year is the depth. The roster, I mean, Vrabel's got them all pulling in the right direction, which is worth something. Drake May's taking the step, which is obviously worth even more. But the depth on the team was the one thing that we think that could hold them back. Thank God they only have one game until they go into the bye to get some players back. I saw a report before we got on here that there's some internal optimism with the Patriots that they're looking at just some severe sprains with Wilson and Campbell. But that being said, without mentioning Wilson and Campbell, you have Landry, who was a game time decision. Jelani Talai missed the game with some personal reasons. I hope everything's okay on that front. Milton Williams is out for at least another 3 games on the IR. So, or 3 weeks, pardon me, on IR. So there is some, I would agree the Patriots being a loser this week. I think the elephant in the room for me, without talking about injuries, talking about the Patriots being losers, is who the hell was number 10 in the first quarter of this game? Who is 10 in blue or 10 in white in the first quarter of this game? It looked like you went and you got Mac Jones and you put him behind center for the Patriots again, dude. It was terrifying, dude. Mm-hmm. It looked like there was a point in time he threw one between Travion Henderson and Hunter Henry on one of the first and second drives where it looked like he started to throw the other one, got indecisive, went to throw the other one, and literally just threw a perfect pass right in the fucking middle of the two guys. And it's just like, the indecisiveness in the slow starts of games. They had another team go up 7-0. It wasn't the first drive this time, but it was a 7-0 lead for the Bengals. I think it was a 10-0.
It was 10-0 at one point
until the Patriots got going. So the Patriots are losers on the injury front, but I also think there's some glaring weaknesses on this team where you really got to get some stuff shored up before we start playing some big boys like the Bills again, the Ravens, and then going into the playoffs. I don't think you can go down to 10-0 to the Ravens. They'll just run it right down your throat. You can't go down 10-0 to Josh Allen. They're gonna ride that high. They're a very streaky team, and as soon as they get out in front of you, they're gonna boat race you. So,
I'm gonna pause you on that.
What?
On the Josh Allen thing there. Come on. I'm going to get my piece in about the Bills. If you go down 10-0 to Josh Allen and the Bills, you can come back from that. We saw that be on Thursday night with Houston. You get some pressure on them, you can come back and put up those points and go with it.
Yeah, but we don't have the second coming of Jesus Christ, a.k.a. Davis Mills, as our quarterback. All right, dude? Let's not get fucking crazy.
I think Drake May's a second year quarterback. He's not going to be perfect every quarter of every game. So he started off, you know, a little shaky. The pick six was awful. You know, he airmailed that. But he's going to need some help in the backfield. The running backs are going to have to help him. I thought it was interesting that even though Ramondre Stevenson was evidently healthy, he barely got any touches. This was really a Trevion Henderson game, and Henderson was, you know, less than inspiring. He wasn't good. So I was a little bit surprised that Stevenson wasn't more involved. Maybe that changes moving forward. But both of those guys are going to have to help out May. You know, this can't be a Drake May production, you know, every week. It just can't. He's a young quarterback. He's going to make mistakes. And, you know, he started off shaky and right at the ship. But, you know, this team cannot win without a dynamic set of wide receivers, which they don't have, and no running game. That's not going to get them far.
I agree. And I think the one thing you have to attack this offseason is getting the offense to a point where it's not the Drake May show. I think they have to be able to win in multiple different ways. And I think that's the number one thing holding the Patriots back here is the team goes as the quarterback goes. I know there's a million teams like that, and all teams are going to be like that to a certain extent. But like you said, it can't be the Drake May show, and it's his 25th game in the league. Like it cannot be the Drake May show, no matter how good and perfect and beautiful and handsome and wholesome and
wholesome
he is. But I can't do it all by himself. And I do agree that the Henderson dude, they're having a trouble getting him in space. I thought the whole thing was this guy was supposed to be a home run hitter, a guy that you would get in space, always making the first guy miss. But like today, I felt like the majority of his touches were between the tackles, and it's like, what is the point of getting this dynamic player? Like, I understand, but isn't the whole point of not giving him a diet of 15, 20 carries but between the tackles? That's the whole point. We've been screaming from high heavens that the heavy workload is what's going to do this guy in.
Was that an unintended plug for the show?
Yes.
Yeah, yes.
Sometimes greatness just pours out of you, you know?
You know, I'd say that with the running game, I mean, you saw a perfect example of how ineffective their running game is when they got stuffed. What was it? Was it six times down at the goal line? Yeah. They got a penalty. They got help, and they couldn't punch it in for that 1 yard from four downs. And you got to be able to close when you get into the red zone, especially that close, and when you get help from the officials and the penalties. One last thought on this game before we move on is the impact of the injuries on the defense up front, with Milton Williams being down and now Tonga going out in this game. Patriots allowed a 100-yard rusher to Chase Brown in this game on 19 carries. So, I mean, he kind of had his way, over 5 yards a carry in this one. And that to me is extremely concerning, because throughout a majority part of this regular season, the run defense has been dominant. How many weeks did it take for a 50-yard rusher with a single carrier against this defense? How long did that take? I mean, it took, I think, like Double eight months. Or nine games. Yeah, it took first 2 months. And now you're starting to see cracks. We saw it against the Jets, and we saw it in this game too. So that's now two games in a row where we've seen kind of some cracks in the run defense. And for me, that's very concerning.
Well, yeah, and I think this team was supposed to be a run first and play defense team, and that's kind of the exact opposite of what it is. I think it's just a holy crap, like, bend but don't break defense, and let's see if your young quarterback can pull something out of his you know where. But speaking of a team that's less predicated on the quarterback but also a loser this week, I've got the Eagles as one of my losers this week. They blow a 21-0 lead to the Cowboys. Kind of an all-in type of season. You've seen what Howie did at the trade deadline, adding Jalen Phillips. I just don't get it, man. I mean, you had A.J. Brown, I think, 6 receptions for 80 yards and a touchdown in the first half, and not much after that. I know, obviously, you go in at halftime and you make some adjustments, but I just think that there's so many glaring like red flags on this Eagles team that I just don't – I don't know. Winning is the ultimate deodorant. I saw some videos of the Eagles celebrating their victory last year in the Super Bowl, and it was basically like Jalen Hurts and A.J. Brown together the whole time. And it's just so funny how, like, that relationship has seemingly – everything obviously looks different through a lens and on TV – has seemingly deteriorated to a point where they basically don't speak about each other in public. So, I don't know. The Eagles got a lot of work to do here internally, I think. I think the roster's loaded. I just think they have to figure it out and all get on the same page. But I wanted to put the Cowboys as another winner for myself too. It's just they went and made some acquisitions at the deadline. They kind of went a little bit, I don't want to call it all in, but they placed a large bet on this season, and seemingly it's starting to pay off.
Yeah, the Cowboys are right back in the playoff hunt, honestly. George Pickens absolutely destroyed Vic Fangio's defense. It was unbelievable. Now you know why the Steelers were so high on him when they drafted him. It was just, you know, maturity issues, off the field issues that really prevented him, honestly, from being a top 10, top 15 pick. He's that talented, and he was an absolute monster today. The defense got completely shredded. It's way too many guys to count, and there wasn't one culprit. There were probably like five or six culprits. Special teams was terrible. In a weird way, I blame the Jets for this loss because Howie Roseman added Xavier Gibson a few weeks ago, their punt returner. He had gotten cut by Aaron Glenn in the Jets because he made a boneheaded mistake early in the season.
Oh, that's the same guy.
Yeah. So what does Xavier Gibson do? He fields a punt at the 1 yard line for some strange reason, fumbles inside the 10. They got lucky because Brian Schottenheimer decided not to kick the go-ahead field goal with 4 minutes to go. Go for it on fourth down, and the ball in the end zone goes right through CeeDee Lamb's hands. But just a really dumb play by Xavier Gibson. And then on the most pivotal play of the game, a long catch and run by George Pickens to set up the game-winning field goal by Aubrey. Michael Carter, who was a trade deadline acquisition that Howie Roseman made with the New York Jets, bumps into Quinyon Mitchell, essentially picks Quinyon Mitchell, who was covering George Pickens, to free him up for the long catch and run. And that ultimately did them in. The offense was great up until, you know, 5 minutes into the second quarter. So the first quarter was awesome. First 5 minutes of the second quarter was awesome. 3-touchdown lead. They got shut out the rest of the game. The offense looked anemic after that. The defense was absolutely horrible. They committed a season-high 14 turnovers for almost 100 penalty yards. And look, the Cowboys gave him plenty of opportunities. Generally speaking, the Cowboys are a dumb team, but the Eagles lost to a dumb team by being dumber. And that's really how I viewed this game. You cannot blow a 3-touchdown lead. I don't care if it's in the first quarter. You cannot blow a 3-touchdown lead in the NFL.
Instead of dumb and dumber, it's dumb versus dumber.
You know, for me, it's the running game of the Eagles. You know, it's been kind of off all year. But when you have a guy like Saquon Barkley back there, he's averaging 2.2 yards a carry in this one. Like, Jalen Hurts is your leading rusher with 33 yards. That's not a recipe for success offensively. I mean, it was the bright spot for the Eagles was that A.J. Brown was heavily involved in the offense this week with over 100 yards, a touchdown. But it's hard for me to look at like just peering at the box score and seeing that stat line from Saquon Barkley. Like, we know what Saquon Barkley is. He's coming off an incredible season last year, and it just seems like it has not been right this year.
Yeah, they played 11 games. Honestly, if you're being objective about it, Saquon Barkley has been a non-factor for probably eight of those 11 games. Part of that's the offensive line. You know, they're without their all-pro right tackle, Lane Johnson, who's probably the best right tackle of this generation, future Hall of Famer. And Fred Johnson, who replaced him, wasn't very good. I think that was to be expected. Nobody really thought he would be good. But they've, outside of a few games, Saquon has been completely invisible. And you're absolutely right, Burge. If you have Saquon Barkley in your backfield and you're up by 3 touchdowns, you would think that he would get more than 10 carries in a game. And you certainly would think he would have more than, 2.2 yards a carry. So, look, they're a mess offensively. They've won a couple games prior to this week, barely, because their defense was lights out, but their defense got shredded by Dak and Pickens. They just looked awful. As I said earlier, I can't pick just one guy on defense that was terrible. Michael Carter made the big screw up at the end of the game. But prior to that, guys were getting beat left and right. It was just a complete mess. They were absolutely awful. They couldn't even stop Javonte Williams in the second half. That guy was running all over him after halftime. Just a complete mess. Great news for the Cowboys. They're in the thick of it now. But the Eagles have a lot of questions to answer if they want to have any semblance of repeating as Super Bowl champions.
And a lot's to be said, a lot's being said about the fact that, oh my God, dude, the Rams are slapping Tampa Bay 14-0 and 40 seconds left in the first quarter. But a lot's being said about Hurts and not being able to pass the ball, but you're up 21-0 with like 40 minutes left in the game, and you can't depend on the best running back and best running team from last year to salt that game away with a 3-touchdown lead. I don't know. That's just
best running back of this generation of running backs.
Yeah,
I mean you can say that.
You can. I don't. There's so many things you can say about the Eagles, but I think the fact that you're blowing big leads with a supposed lethal running attack. I mean, that's not a recipe for success, there, boys, is it?
Not at all.
All right. Well, that's. I kind of emptied the clip, boys. How do you guys feel?
I think we hit on everything that we wanted to talk about today, and you're already given the update on the Sunday night game. I love that. And the Rams are going to be still the best team in the league on the power rankings. Spoiler alert.
I think our number one seed might be locked up in these power rankings. But Baker already threw a pick. Rams have the ball back, driving to make it 21-0. So 21-0 seems to be the bugaboo score today, though. So you never know what happens. Hey, what did they say? They say the 2-goal lead is the most dangerous lead in hockey, right? The 21-0. The 21-0 lead is the most dangerous lead in the NFL. But anyway. That was our Tuesday or now Monday edition of the Between the Tackles podcast. I'm Joe Bergeron Manish alongside as well. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.